we had received the presentation of the update on the FRAP 2015-16 appeals and preparation for FRAP 2020. So I'm going to allow honourable members to ask questions. Honourable Vandale.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to start with a matter that has been in the media, and I want maybe the Minister to inform the committee what the situation in the Fisheries Department is at the moment. The media reports that the DGG has been suspended and that she's facing charges of 155 charges for the theft and corruption and fraud. I think that, you know, as a committee, you should keep us in your mind and tell us what is going on, because the DGG is also the delegated authority that has to sit over this FRAP process. And we can't have a process that is tainted, which has not been solved from all these cases. And you don't have to go into the merits of the case. Please don't do that, because I think that's still a process that's happening. So the other thing is, Minister, I want to put it to you that, you know, the unavailability of TAC resources are as a direct result of the department's inability to deal with poaching. And therefore, no, there should be nobody else to blame but the department for this problem. Poachers steal from the poor. And the poor are the people that are wanting these TAC allocation, the small-scale fishermen. And they are being negatively affected by this. Then it was also reported in the media that an agreement exists between the WWF, the collective, and the department. And are we going to see this agreement? Because I also see in the media that the collective have distanced itself from that. They say what the department is saying is not true, and the collective claims to be speaking for the fishing communities. Can you just give us an update on that and where that stands? And then, you know, would like to know if any studies have been done by the department on the aquaculture of West Coast rock lobster. And if not, why not? It has a process begun to make it easier for aquaculture farms to be established, because there's a lot of red tape in establishing this, and it's at huge costs. And sometimes these are inhibiting factors that, and we need to grow our aquaculture so that it releases more TAC to be allocated to the small-scale fishermen. And maybe they can also be involved in that. And then I've been to Doringbaai this weekend to go and see the Doringbaai abalone farm. They are on a small scale making ends meet with a small quota or a small, what do they call it? I won't say it's a quota, but they are seen as small scale. Can we not include them in this program we have, where we upgrade small scale to a bigger business, to what do we call it? We call it on the Pakisa, to commercialize them better. I know in provinces they have decided to do 40 small scale farmers. Is that just on the farming, or is that also on fish farming or on abalone farming? Can that not be included? And maybe you have some plans and some thoughts on that. I mean, we have invested some money there. It is working. It's a good project. It's yielding results. But they are just too small on economies of scale to sustain the whole community. And I really have I think this is a very worthy project and should take more of our attention. Thank you, Minister.
Honourable members, Minister, you remember that at some point when we were confronted with this abalone problem, poaching and etc. You said, Minister, why don't you escalate this matter like what the Department of Environment and what had done with the Rauno poaching? Because you said abalone is a lucrative species, therefore we must actually poaching it should then be fought with everything that we have. And the question is, how far are you in making sure that you involve other security clusters and declare a state of emergency around the issue of abalone, like what happened with the Rauno poaching? The second question is, in the last presentation you said that there were people who interfered with the process of the appeals processes, and those people were were your officials, where they went to in the area where the appeals are done and start taking photos. And you and the DG, you promised that you're going to handle it. Can we get the progress on that? The last thing is the basket, which affect the small fisheries. There is this problem of entitlement by those previously had been awarded the rights, and which when you talk about the small scale fisheries, they feel threatened. And what is it that is being done to make sure that both the small scale fisheries and the commercials are getting the rights such that or the basket becomes fair to everybody? The last thing is the issues of the black researchers, your black researchers. We raised the issue that they've actually complained to me to say that they are not given opportunity to explore or to unleash their potential in the whole process, in the system. So and I've raised it in the last meeting. I just want to check, Minister, whether have you interacted with them? What is the way forward? And how do we make sure that we, as we work with the new entrants, we are able even to retain the skills and close the gap of having a shortage of skills without ignoring labor relation matters. And in the presentation, the presenter said that they are going to consult. They have not finalized anything. But there was a proposal from FAO that is it possible for the department to hold a dialogue, sort of a seminar, where these things can be explained to everybody and understood by everybody. So I just want to check your take on that, whether is it possible And the other issue is that in one meeting when we have signed the agreement on the tuna bilateral agreements, we said that we're able to, our participation has increased the tons that we were allocated in the previous years. Just to check, what impact does it have to South Africa, that agreement on the increment of the tons to South Africa, and what impact does it is going to have in our communities or in the fishery industry? That is Papa.
Thank you, Chair. There's only one clarity or question on slide 11. There's a mention of challenges, and the main one is said to be the capacity issue. And there's a list of initiatives that are being taken to try and resolve this. But I'm interested in a long-term or almost permanent situation that is recommended that would resolve this once and for all, in a way that may be something that can be proposed and that also the committee should support and make sure that this issue of capacity is resolved once and for all. Thank you, Chair.
Minister, and your team.
Thanks, Chairperson. Obviously, the team will come in some of the areas. But dealing with the first question that was raised by the Honourable Van Dalen on the sustainability and the charges laid against the DDG fisheries and the impact thereof, the DDG fisheries is back at work, as you saw last week. But the process is still ongoing in terms of putting up a team that is firm. We agree that I will be meeting possibly this afternoon with the Deputy Minister and the DG to look at what measures must we put up to ensure that there is one, a program that will be creating a sustainability program going forward to ensure that the industry and all stakeholders can be comfortable with the process going forward. I will not dwell with the alleged or the allegations laid, as you also yourself said, but we are working towards, and that will also better answer the question raised by Honourable Chapa, to say that among the issues to debate that we have outlined is the issue you are raising, to say that, for instance, preferable, given the complications of allocations, if you had enough staffing, you would allocate per two or three fish species a particular individual who would focus, so that everything is taken into account. You don't have one person looking at all, because you need to look at the current, the policy, the constitution, and the act, so that when you allocate, you have taken all those into account, as well as the recommendation of the scientific committee, because in fisheries, that is very important. So we are working on that. I'm sure by the end of this week, we will have met to look at those. What we have done to give that comfort, we are going to follow on the 20 temporary workers who are in the office, because some of them will be for 3 years. So I cannot have that power to appoint them for over 3 years. A letter has been written to the Department of DPSA. We are going to follow up on the matter in question. The unavailability of resources, one of the things I think we have debated, which we are implementing, is one to change the storage of abalone, which is something I think I will get a report, because everything has been signed now, so that it is stored in a safe place to prevent the occurrence of it being stolen and people's lives being exposed. And the fact that we would like to make sure that any proceeds from the sale of captured abalone or returned abalone is used precisely to empower, and which covers also partly the issue raised by the Honourable Chairperson, to say what is it that we are doing. Our intention is that when we received the funds from the Arnold Benji's proceeds, that money will be put up into a fund and a pool. And the aim thereof is to ensure that the Department of Police, so the Department of State, all the state security agencies are put together so that we can have a program, but working with communities, because once communities are not part of this fight against abalone, we will not be able to. I agree with the chairperson that we need to elevate the fight against abalone theft. And I agree to say, at the end of the day, it is the task of the department to ensure that systems are in place to protect and prevent abalone poaching. The collective, unfortunately, I think if there's somebody with knowledge of any agreement between the collective and the WWF and the government, I'm not aware of any. What I know is the fact that an appeal has been lodged, and the collective was part of the WWF effort in the case in question. I've not been informed of any. Yes, of course, there have been in terms of what has been in the media, and the team has informed me that they have been engaging the different communities, because there has been a cut in the TAC on abalone, which has caused some disgruntlement, as well as the possible cut if the judgment remains, which would be by almost half of what was allocated before. On the issue of aquaculture and why don't we include West Coast rock lobster, I think Mr. Pelemane can answer on that, because that is the area of expertise and it is an area he is dealing with. And I've tried to answer the question that we need, once those funds are located, or think with DG, we need to work on that, because it is an area that he has to foresee it is done to create a fund in within the fisheries where all the funds that are accrued from all this from this case of the late Mr. Arnold Benjis and any other resource is created to fight poaching, which will have to be also including the fight and also working with communities. On the issue of the process, I think we will be able to give the feedback. My report is that the suspensions have been issued. Obviously, there will have to be processes that are followed in terms of those people who are charged. Maybe we can get a feedback, but as far as I know, such processes have been, the report I received was that internal processes have been effected. On the issue of the black scientist, I think one of the acting chief directors is here, Mr. Pierre. I'm sure he will be able to outline if there is a debate, but I agree that if there is no clear future process or stake done to deal with the aspirations of our black scientists, we need, but I'm sure I will leave that to him. Holding off a seminar to deal with the broader issue, I will leave that to the team to deal with how visible, because remember, when you deal with issues of allocations, you deal with the current holders, you deal with future allocations, you deal with scientific reports that determine what is feasible. So you need to weigh that against anything, but I agree. A part of the process leading to the allocations will be the issue of public engagement. Whether those can be held under one roof, I think that they can better explain and advise. Tuna allocations, I think, even on that, I know that currently there are negotiations on tuna allocations. and what that has done in adding what is available fish within the tuna sector, I think the team are better placed to look at that. Bakutapa, I agree, Bakutapa, that we need a permanent solution in dealing with some of the key vacancies. By the way, is a matter I said when this afternoon we find time between myself, DG and the DDG to look especially on key important vacancies within the fishery sector. Once we have got everybody acting, obviously you're going to have some gaps, especially in some of the key areas. It's something we have discussed us this morning. And I'm sure in the next meeting we'll be reporting the progress going forward. But generally speaking, to come to back to the question raised by Honorable Van Dalen, the issue of aquaculture as a future venture, not to augment the depleted fisheries, as well as to look at a particular fish species, the issue you are referring of Doran Bay. I don't know if, I'm sure in the answer, there will be an answer of how can they be assisted to grow that fishery and also expand and become a more viable option that can grow the economy. But I will leave to the team to deal with other issues.
Where do we start, DG?
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair. Perhaps just to buttress or perhaps just expand on what the Minister has explained, maybe let me touch on the issue of the DDG and the disciplinary. Because it seems to me that this particular issue has been taken out of proportion. The issue of the disciplinary of the DDG of fisheries is a process that came out of the Auditor General's report, fundamentally. And there is what we call compliance. In this case, legislative compliance, i.e. SCM, supply chain management. And if that process consistently is not followed, the Auditor General asked the question. And I want to emphasize one thing, that even the disciplinary process itself is not unique, is asking the same questions. It may emerge that she or she may give clarity to those questions and be found not guilty. So I think what has occurred, though, is because of the unique notoriousness of the fishing industry in particular, it just was taken out of proportion and leaked to the media as usual. And consequently, it was all over the place. And suddenly, the newspapers and everyone found her guilty. And now the department had to manage that. And I must just put it to the honorable members, she has not been found guilty. She is subject to the laws of this country like any other citizen. But I can just emphasize that there are other departments that are going through the same process. And their employees are going through the same process, even more serious than this one. But it is not taken out of context. So I felt that let me emphasize that once and for all, so that it is understood by honorable members that process is a normal process, and it is a process that we're managing. In addition to that, me and Minister did now sit together this morning to say, how do we stabilize fisheries? We've asked that question. Minister, in fact, asked me that question. Said, DG, me and you, we need to have a conversation. And but that conversation should involve DM. That we can then say, what is the best way of managing fisheries? And to that extent, we then spoke about, I guess, Mr. Tapa's issue, perhaps I'll touch on it. How do we put a dedicated employees or managers for each sector so that the specificity of managing that sector because of the complexity involved in managing fisheries? And this is what we are also concerned about. And we raised the issue of transformation in fisheries, whether or not is there a platform within fisheries in which there is dedication of attention to transformation. Because it is an inevitability. Whether or not it is being resisted or not resisted, it is an inevitability that people of Khayelitsha, people of Langa, people of Guguletu must be integrated in the economy of fisheries. Small or big and big. And that is going to happen either in our time or in the future. And that debate is a live debate that we have taken and as part of the discourse that we're involved in this morning. And I guess also, Chair, the issue raised about disciplinary is significant in the sense that it is going to allow me to talk to other issues of disciplinary. The two people who have consistently have been disturbing the process of peace, for lack of a better word, I have issued suspension and disciplinary letters for those two individuals. And the people who were identified by the IFEM to have been involved in the Wiljaro case, in that supply chain management, are now sitting in disciplinary processes. I put that together. In the same way that I'm finalizing the NECA case of those people who are overpaid. I've taken that quite seriously, and I want it concluded. The issue that remains, an issue that is a headache to me, and we are going to be sitting with it and the minister this afternoon, is one of COE budget, so-called COE budget overspent. And I think it's a misnomer to me that we budget and all of a sudden in the middle of the year, the budget with the positions cannot no longer be filled. CEO reports that and the head of HR reports that. When you go and check, you find out they are overpaying on overtime. They are overpaying on overperformance. There's overperformance, yet the APPs are not revealing the same. And there is no positive correlation between APPs and this, and that issue we're raising as a debate between myself and the minister this afternoon, so that we actually reach a conclusion whether the conversation I had with National Treasury DG this morning, one that talks to a dedication to a number of issues that are is affecting the agricultural economy, i.e. FMD, avian influenza, the swine fever, and fisheries in the abalone sector, the majority. I raised it. I said, Baba, I need funds. And we're having a deeper conversation with him on that. And that conversation, Minister and I are talking to it this afternoon. So we have raised these issues. In fact, I think let me touch an issue that perhaps is underlying. The issue of me and Minister in leadership, Minister raised it. Said the public protector called and said we need to meet with him, meet with us. Said DG, me and you, we need to meet and put a stop to this. And that was a long talk between me and him this morning. So we are going to that discussion. Though Minister has not talked about. So I think the issues we are surfacing them with the concern that addresses the presidential call to attention on agriculture as an economic driver through employment and food security and all. Let me just see what else have I not touched. I think the specifics in terms of West Coast rock lobster, and I think it may want to go and touch to the East Coast rock lobster, and I think it's deeper than that. To the knowledge of what is available, scientific knowledge of what is available in the sea, to the extent that it informs the allocation of rights to all different types of sectors and fisheries. Honorable Chair, I think the Minister has touched quite a lot of the issues. I just wanted to buttress on them and put an emphasis, and I think the specifics I will leave it to managers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG Palamane and Sue.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the members for the questions. I will be talking to the aquaculture component of the questions. Ms. Middleton will talk to the FREP and the seminar issue. Mr. Sasapeha will then talk on the tuna and the black researchers matter. Honorable Van Delsen asked a question around the West Coast rock lobster. There are two reasons, main reasons, why we currently not farming with the species. Firstly, it's for biological reasons. Secondly, it's for economic reasons. On the biology side of things, the West Coast rock lobster has got a very complicated biological cycle. It has got about 9 different life stages. It takes about 12 years to reach what you call market size. Therefore, we have tried some experiments before, and because of those complicated life stages, it becomes a biologically difficult fish to farm with. And obviously, economically, if it's going to take about 12 years to reach to the market size as well, we need to have such a much higher price for what we're currently getting. It's not as the abalone, because abalone reaches the market size much quicker in plus minus 4 years, and it's actually more in terms of what you get from the market. So those are the two main reasons why we're not farming with. But there has been some successful initiatives, particularly in the Eastern Cape, where you have some holding facilities for once the lobsters are harvested from the wild, you are able to keep them in holding facilities, feed them and fatten them up so that you can fetch better market prices. So we do have such cases in the Eastern Cape. The second question was on the Dorenbay abalone and what are we doing as a department to assist that particular farm. They, we have been working with that farm for a while now. I think to be specific, they are farming with about 20 tons at the moment of abalone, and there's a plan in place to increase to 50 tons before the end of next year, and we have been working closely with them specifically on two issues. The first one, they had challenges on the lease where they were leasing the ground. We intervened to negotiate with the Department of Public Works to issue a lease, and that was done. And the second one that we've been working with them on is around the issue of funding from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. They were recognized as part of the agri-parks, basically, and also together with the Industrial Development Corporation. So those are the specific interventions that we have so far. The third intervention that we have been discussing with them, and we had a meeting earlier this year with both Ruben and Wayne, who are the main drivers of that farm, was around abalone ranching, so that the farm becomes more economically viable. They do have the hatchery capacity that they can then go and seed some of the abalone out in the ocean, and it becomes cheaper to do that so that when they are busy with the expensive infrastructure that is costly to run on a day-to-day basis, they also have something on the side to do that, and we'll be working with them so that they can acquire a permit to do abalone ranching. In general, most of the aquaculture initiatives are supported under the Operation Pakisa initiatives, and I think last time I did make a detailed presentation on some of the initiatives that we have under that program. Just for example, we register projects. At the moment, we've got about 36 projects registered under Operation Pakisa, 26 of which are already operational, and the remainder is still on the planning phase. So some of the initiatives that we have is, for example, to help projects to unblock some of the legislative problems let's say they want to acquire a permit or they want to acquire a lease, because that could take a long time and discourage investment. And we've done to quite a lot of projects successively so. We have also established an interdepartmental authorizations committee that includes some of the key departments such as environmental affairs, rural development and land reform, water and sanitation. They are part of that because they are key towards issuing some of the authorizations for aquaculture. So it's an up and running committee. We also have an initiative called Aquaculture Development Fund. We've got a working group with most of the government departments that do fund aquaculture, including some of the DFIs as well. We actually have a meeting next week for that particular working group. We have established a certification program to make sure that the products are certified to be safe for human consumption. I'm sure you are aware because most of the international markets now require government guarantees that these products are firstly safe for human consumption and secondly they are also disease free. So we've got that program up and running. We also have another program on around the skills whereby we work with the Department of Higher Education and Training. We actually have a working group there and we have identified the different skills from farm to government to the private sector, so all the levels of skills within the aquaculture are addressed or will be addressed. And one of the milestones that we have reached when it comes to the skills is that last year we sent five state vets to do a master's in aquatic medicine because here in South Africa we don't have an area of specialization for fish diseases. So we sent them to Stirling University and they are back. They came back now in September. So we should now at least have additional five qualified fish vets. And this year we have sent another group of three. They are also going to be doing that master's for a year. Honorable Chairperson, I think those are some of the key issues and that we are addressing under the initiative of aquaculture. My colleagues will talk to the other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I'm just going to deal with the one issue raised by the Chairperson, and that is the request from FAWU for a symposium dealing with FRAP 2020. Chair, our response to that is next year when we are ready for the public consultation process. We have committed ourselves and we've given an undertaking that we will consult extensively with all stakeholders and role players. And that would include FAWU, KASATU and others. Whether or not the form of that consultation will take a symposium form or not is something that we can discuss with FAWU themselves. But in principle, yes, we will engage with them.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'll just maybe talk briefly on the issues of black and young scientists as well as the response regarding the benefits that we have accrued so far from being part of the TUNA RFMOs. Chairperson,
can you just privilege members with your name because you are new in this meeting?
Okay, thanks very much. My name is Sasa Pierre. I'm the Acting Chief Director responsible for Fisheries Research and Development. Chairperson, skills shortage has always been a challenge in the maritime space, and unfortunately we are not immune, and currently we find ourselves facing an aging cohort of researchers, and to be a credible researcher and an expert it takes a lot of years for you to actually even gain respect of your fellow scientists locally and abroad. Chair, we have a number of programs that we are currently running to ensure that we try to recruit students as far as in universities. We are in partnerships with various universities and academic institutions, UCT, UWC, Rhodes and Forte. And we also have a number of black students that we afford learnership programs within the department, some of which in the past week they've just completed with CPUT. And amongst those programs, Chair, I can also proudly say I'm part of one of the scientists that have gone through one of those programs. Chair, we also have a number of cruises, research cruises that are exclusively designed for skills development. That's one that has just completed on our Ellen Kuzwayo with Nelson Mandela University. And in January this year, there will be a cruise that it's exclusively on the Fidget of Nansen that is currently docked at Simonstown. That would be a partnership between South Africa, Namibia, and Angola that is particularly for the purposes of skills development and training to ensure that we recruit young black scientists to come on board. On the issue of the tuna chair that you raised to try to get a feel of the benefits that have accrued to the country, in particular referring to CCSBT, which is the conservation for the southern bluefin tuna. Last year, our TAC increased from 40 tons to 450 tons, and as a result of that, by default, it has sustained jobs within that sector. Right holders now are able to fish slightly longer than they would have taken to catch and land the 40 tons, and the benefits also accrue down the value chain as part of processing and marketing as well. And our involvement in this RFMOs, we have managed, since we are now members and not cooperating non-contracting members, we have managed to increase our footprint in terms of working together with researchers in those RFMOs. Some of the models that they use to conduct stock assessment are developed by our very own local scientists, and we also work together with them in terms of exchange of information with regards to fisheries compliance matters. And now that we are members, as indicated, we have a better say in how the resources are managed in this RFMOs. We contribute to development of conservation and management measures, as well as we do chair some of the panels that are in that RFMOs. The current challenge that we are having in that particular sector is the suitability of vessels that are required to access those resources that are at the high seas. Suitability in terms of the structure of those vessels that are suitable, as well as the processing facilities on board those vessels, because some of these fish, you'd have to blast freeze it up to minus 60 degrees, and you might find that not all vessels are suitable to be able to do that, to make sure that you retain the quality of the product that makes its way to the market. The next challenge that we face is the one of skills of fishermen on board the vessels that is required to be able to catch, handle, and then process the catch. And in order to address those, we have entered into joint ventures with foreign flagged vessels, the Japanese in particular, where they provide the vessels as a form of a platform to allow us to access the resource, and then they conduct skills development and training on board the vessels, and with the intentions of reflagging those vessels to have them registered as South African vessels. And all that catch that is landed by those vessels is reported exclusively as South African catch and accrued to South Africa. Thanks very much, Chair.
Minister?
And the importance of that catch being registered as South African catch is because when allocations are made at the International Center where this is done, a historical data of how much was cast in this country informs. If you were to have a foreign vessel fishing in your waters and the catch is not registered in that country, as another country may claim that catch has been, and that will influence the it is the importance of that participation. I just wanted to make that follow up.
Before I give it to members for follow up, you said you are
Sasa.
Yes. These five vets that you have, how many women out of the vets that you have they've taken to, you said Spain, those that have qualified the vets for fish, how many women? You said you have five qualified vets now, as we speak, it's Palaman.
Yes,
yeah. So how many of those, that five, are women? So, and when we report all the time, when you give the numbers, you must expatiate on your numbers, just to say, out of five vets, two are women, and because it's a policy.
Thank you, Chairperson. Out of the five, two are female. One is from the Western Cape Department of Agriculture, and the other lady is from the KZN Agriculture Department. And then the other three males, one is from the Eastern Cape Department of Agriculture, another one from Northwest Department of Agriculture, and then finally from Gauteng Department of Agriculture. So this year we have now gone into the other provinces that were not catered for last year. So we have a female from Mpumalanga, and one male from Limpopo, and then another male from Northwest. Free State had an opportunity in the first round and the second round, but the person keep on declining. So we'll have to look into... So Free State is the only province at the moment that does not have a qualified fish vet.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of your mentoring or your, like addressing your skills shortages, do you take statistics from the time that the new democracy skilled people, there were people that were sent to Norway at some stage by the department? Did you hire them, or did you do like social development where they took people to university for social work? When they come back, they are not hired. Do you keep statistics, and then how do you replace them into the department? Where do we find them now, today, as we speak? And in terms of internship, with this program of internship, I think it is a waste of time, because government says that they will give people skills, and then when they do get the skills, after a year, they discard them, you see. So there is no clear format or program that says these are the kids that we have mentored, and we have used resources as government, and this is how we will place them. Even if they do have vacancies, there is no clear program that they fit these kids into those vacancies. So it's a waste of time. You train these young people and then you discard them. So in your department, do you have a clear, because now you're stressing in terms of internship. It's not only the ones that you go for training. Even if they go for training in Spain, you spend a lot of resources on them. Do they have a space in the department? And throughout the years, can you show us how many did you put in and how many will they fill when they come back? This is the number. I mean, when you do your presentation, it's not clear. What is the number that you train every year, and how will they fit into all the spaces, the gaps that you want as a department, so that it gets us into a goal where we will be saying by this time, this department will be addressing issues of unemployment, delivering on the issues that we want as government and all that. You see, so your presentation is not very clear. It's like you're all over. I'm not in the department, but I can't get the gist of what you have presented in terms of skills. Are you really heading to the goal of shortage, or is it just a goal?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask a question around the Article 21 transfers. This is where somebody has a 15-year quota, and then he can't take it out and he sells it to a bigger company like Oceana or somebody else, and then they transfer it onto their books through an Article 21 transfer, if I'm not mistaken. It might be the wrong number or something like that. So what I'm asking is, if it's from the nearshore quota holder, they call it paper quotas, I think that's what we talked about before. So if he doesn't take it out and he sells that quota to a bigger company, does that quota, after the time has lapsed, come back to the sector, or does it stay with that bigger company? I'm just confused about how that works. Does it come back for the utilization or the reallocation for those people, or are the sector now poorer for that and their quota gets made smaller at the next round of allocation? And then thank you very much for the aquaculture answers. I do appreciate it. And I just want to talk about the regulations around this. I mean, the regulations, we have first world regulations to regulate aquaculture, but in this country we are still trying to establish the aquaculture. And you talk about what government is doing and how much government is spending on it, but what about the private sector? I mean, they have lots of money. They have a quota. They get halved, they must get the money from somewhere. So they are prepared to put up aquaculture farms, big ones. And then those are hampered through romslomp and red tape and legislation that prohibits them from doing it. I mean, if you go to Clainsia, I think I've spoken about it. This is a deserted mine area. People still have to do an EIA on a place that's already been demolished, or there is no nature there to speak of. And they still have to go through all these lengthy processes. So I would say, let's see which are those legislations that inhibit it, and put the moratorium on for a while, so that we can establish it, so that it can grow bigger, and then it would help this country a lot. I think the president said we want to grow it to a 25,000 ton industry in the next 2 or 3 or 4 years, but we're not going to do it if the legislation prohibits it. I mean, it takes 4 or 5 years for an EIA to be done. And then there's these regulations. I go to the farm, I ask them, so there's this hatchery. Can't you just let some eggs go into the sea so that it can populate the sea again? They say, no. You know, the legislation prohibits us. We must make sure that the water that goes out here is clean from anything. I mean, why? The whole area is desolate, and if you can let it grow on a natural way, maybe, then why don't we do it? I mean, it just seems very self-destructive. Maybe you have a better answer and can convince me of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Fandan. Minister, these transformational issues, I think we should have the understanding of the department how, in terms of allocations of rights. What in your view, in terms of, if you will say, us transform the sector, what will then be the picture in terms of the ownership, the composition, and the development? The second issue is, at some point when you present, you're raising the challenges on the prospecting rights in mining. Those that there is a minerals
Minerals Department has given a license to a company to the minerals prospecting rights to mine in an area where Hague is laying eggs. You were going to discuss with the Minister of Environment in the Operation Pakisa. How far is it, and how do we make sure that we manage the process that we protect fishery? As the sector, because you know mining is you mine underground. Obviously, those that are given the rights for mining, they might not have the scientific knowledge of how your species are supposed to be maintained and protected and all those things. The other issue is on the scientists that had all the documents of the department, which the company, the contract was to lapse, and we just want to check out what is it that you have done. The scientists from UCT. If you can get update on that. And last, you have raised the challenges on the budget, on the personnel for the implementation of the FREP. So what is it that you're going to do? For instance, if you don't get, what are you trying to tell us? If you are not getting the budget, means that you're going to have a difficulty in finalizing the FREP in time, or what is the situation? The last thing is on the protected areas. At some point, we're raising that areas that have been protected by the Department of Environment in other areas affecting the small-scale fisheries. So what is the situation? I see now, last you said you have reduced from 42 to 20. I can't remember the numbers. But the question is, how do you then manage the process such that, because the protected areas, in my own understanding, you'll clarify, you protect the area so that the area can recuperate, and you then have the increased species and all those things. And how long does it have to take? In your planning, of course, you should then take that in cognizance, that we have 22 protected areas in 2050 or 2060, then this is how it would look like. And for the fact that is Department of Environment that is protecting those areas, what is the contribution of, how are you going to know that now the areas, because environment protect the ocean, they are not dealing with the species inside the water. So you are the ones that deal with the species in the water. What is it that, how are you going to know at some point or monitor that protection is not used to exclude our people? It's meant indeed to make sure that the areas recover, and then later on then we can allocate a species to our people. How are you going to monitor that? Minister and your team.
Thanks, Chairperson. Some of the issues will be dealt with by the team. But let me start with the issue of issues of the transfers. What happens to those quotas when the fishery comes to an end? Are they allocated back to the previous owners? I'm sure the team will deal with that. On the issue of skills, I'm sure also touching on what has happened to people who were trained abroad in Norway as to whether they come back and what is the benefit from programs like internship. But let me deal with the issue of regulations. When the issue of the oceans economy, Operation Pagisa on fisheries came, a number of departments were clustered together, being led by DN, the Department of Transport, the Department of Mineral Resources, the Department of Agriculture. And each department has got a specific purpose. The reason the Department of DEA was leading is because they are the ones who must do the environmental impact assessment, which I think is what you are referring to, Honorable Van Dalen. And we're able to curtail that, but if there are issues you are referring to, the best would be to refer them back to, because there is a task team that is led by that branch. And we're able to sort out some of the issues. I agree with you with the issue of Clean Sea, which used to be a mine that is no longer in operation. And there were restrictions, of course, because remember, when you fish, some people may use fishing as an entry to steal alluvial diamonds. So there were restrictions as to what can happen and not happen. So I think those are issues, I think, we have to take them back to that interministerial committee, because there is a team of aspects who are dealing with the issues where such EIAs are really delaying the process. Because I agree, if we are to grow the economy, and I think we can't even look at the issue you are raising, that aquaculture firms are claiming that they cannot replenish the depleted stock, either using the, preferably maybe, the hatched fingerlings to plant them back into the ocean. And I think we need to check whether the issue is because of the fear of contamination or whatever. And if the issue is between us and the Department of DEA, we need to clarify that, because the only way you can augment and increase the stocks is to plant back to the natural space. Transformation. Our understanding is that it can be done in a number of ways. One is through ensuring that during allocations you look at how do you transform, taking into account that some of the fish species would need access to a vessel, which means there will have to be negotiations between those new entrants and the vessel owners. That is something I think is being dealt with, because we have to make sure that the current policies and the current list speaks to the Constitution as well as to the MRLF, so that there is no contradiction going forward. Profiting rights is one. I think, again, the team may expand more around that. Even the issue of mining rights, because I know that in some of the areas is to look for new minerals like phosphate, which is also found in the ocean, and how will that impact? And I remember very well when this matter came, we said we need to ensure that such prospecting rights are not going to impede in areas where hatching of fish takes place or where a hake lays its eggs. We need to avoid that. So it is something that is within that task team led by DEA, comprising of the Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, Transport, because the reason we have got this is because transportation of rigs as well as drilling of oil is done by other departments, but it must at all times take care of the situation. And the other issue was this, that what happens to the scientific documents, and I'm sure it is one area I think we need to be engaged upon. Protected areas is one of the areas I think is tricky. I remember we have been coordinating with the Department of DEA in saying that once scientific proof, because they can do that scientifically, they can detect if there has been numbers in that area that would guarantee, especially fishing by small scale. I remember there was the Tsitsikamma situation where both departments agreed that fishing can take place where you allow fish people who are small scale fisheries to fish, but we were stuck because the environmental formations took the Department of DIA to court, and I'm sure there may be a feedback as to what happened later. But we can be able to tell because scientists do verify if the number of fish or the fish numbers have increased such that there can be an allowed. Of course, when this happens, it should be at all times by discussions as it sometimes reduces the space, but it is complying to the global protocol that has been signed to say, how do you make sure that your fish species, you protect the environment and all those things are taken into account. But I will leave other issues to the team to deal with. But the other way you can also drive transformation, Chairperson, is through engaging the industry. Some of the industry players have got fish species that are not so lucrative to their own fishing, which when you engage and begin to discuss, there can be an amicable agreement. There are processes we are engaging now with different mining, sorry, you mentioned the mining issues now, with different fishing companies, where at the level of CEOs, when we're having the investment summit, we had a discussion along the sides to say, if we're to make sure that more fish is available to small scale, what would be it that they would like to be done so that we manage the process of exposing or making fish available to small scale so that the basket is at least a little bit bigger. But I will leave the issues dealing with the private sector, and I think on the clean sea there were a number of fish species that were mentioned that there can be, if by agreement with the Department of Mineral Resources, if they can agree. Because I know that in some of the areas they were not allowing people to go and fish or do certain things. If those can be reviewed, that fishing, I mean mining has depleted in that area, if we can revisit that.
Thank you, Minister Chairperson, Honourable Members. I will deal with a question from Honourable Van Dalen on the Section 21 transfers. You are correct. You did cite the correct section of the MLRA. So Section 21 of the MLRA refers to the conditions under which rights can be transferred from one party to another. And we also have a transfer policy that expands on that Section 21 of the MLRA. Very briefly, if a right is transferred, let's just make it simple. Let's take two individuals. If the right is transferred from X to Y at any time during the duration of the right, it reverts back to the state when that right period comes to an end. So it doesn't matter who the right holder is. When the right expires, it reverts back to the state. So it's not lost to the sector. All rights belong to the state and will be reallocated when the duration expires. Just for your information as well, in FRAP 2015, we did amend the policies, the sector-specific policies, for those species that were being reallocated in FRAP 15 to put a two-year moratorium on the transfer of a right. The intention there the thinking, the logic behind it was we were trying to prevent paper quota or fronting for that kind of poor people sell their right or just apply fictitiously and then a bigger entity takes ownership of the right, and those people never had any intention of being part of the fishing industry. So that was the thinking, especially in West Coast Rock Lobster. We were attempting to prevent blatant fronting by putting a two-year moratorium. And then the other factor that one of the criteria, for like the most rigid criteria in a transfer, is that if a right is transferred, it cannot adversely affect the transformation profile. It has to improve or at least maintain the transformation profile of that right. I will also, the minister has dealt with issues of transformation, that's the question the chairperson asked. But Chair, I think you're right that in the sectors for FRAP 2020, the department should be upfront about its vision for transformation in that fishery. And the transformation profiles per fishery will vary. It will depend on the fishery that we're talking about. But we are looking at when we, as part of the review of the policies, that we make upfront transformation vision statements that we'll consult as part of the public consultation process. Chair, you also raised the issue of budget for FRAP, and you were unclear whether we were saying we did or didn't have budget. I think the situation is that our budget is tight, as all government departments. And in terms of fisheries, what we've been saying is that we do need to review our revenue model. And there are things that we could do better in terms of revenue collection, looking at new revenue streams. And also as part of FRAP 2020, we will be reviewing the levies, so what fishers pay when they land fish, the levies on landed fish. We will be reviewing all fees, harbour fees, application fees, permitting fees. The levies, for instance, have not been adjusted for many, many years. They're not even inflation-related at the moment. So as part of the FRAP 2020, we will be looking at adjusting all those levies and fees, and we will be consulting on it, and we're hoping that that will also give us slightly more revenue that can be used as to deal with the FRAP 2020, which is not a cheap process. It costs us a lot of money.
Thank you, honourable members. I will talk to the aquaculture legislation aspect as well as the marine protected area briefly. Regarding the stock enhancement, that is, if maybe the industry wants to go and seed using the hatchery out at sea, we do have a policy on that. It is doable, it is allowable. However, you need to have permission from the department to do that. Linked to stock enhancement is ranching. We have for abalone, three areas in the Eastern Cape that are currently active with ranching permits, and, so the farms are able to take their seed and go in and seed it out in the ocean. Northern Cape, we have further three areas. We had made available three areas again in the Western Cape for abalone ranching as well, but there were no interest on that aspect. The reason that they need to have a proper permission is because we need to control two things. Firstly, the genetic, possible genetic impacts, because once you produce the seed under hatchery conditions, you are able to manipulate the genetics of that particular species. and we want to make sure that once you go and seed it out in the wild, you protect the genetic integrity of the wild stock. So there are guidelines in terms of how you're supposed to produce your seed in the hatchery for the purpose of stock enhancement. The second one is on possible disease transfers. We want to make sure whatever may come from your hatchery is free of some of the pathogens and diseases that may exist and go and affect the wild stocks. In general, the legislation since Operation Pakisa, there has been some form of changes, particularly when it comes to the EIA regulations. They were changed immediately after Operation Pakisa to make sure that the time frames are a bit shorter. The process is not as stringent as it is. And I think a case that testifies as the beneficiary of that is also the Doornbuy abalone, whereby the expansion of the project, the EIA that they did, was approved on record time. It can take anything up to 6-8 months or a year, compared to the 3-5 years that it used to take in the past. We have also developed the Aquaculture Development Bill, and I think the bill is currently going through the parliamentary processes. And the purpose of that bill is to streamline authorizations and all other aspects of the legislation pertaining to aquaculture, because the audit that we did on the legislation for aquaculture, I found that there's about 30 pieces of legislation that affect the sector one way or another. And you can imagine from province to province, the approach in terms of applying the law will be different. Hence, we came up with the Aquaculture Bill to make sure that there's harmonization across the different legislation, across the different departments, across the different provinces, basically. So that's what we have done. And on the marine protected area, those areas, so I think they are declared in terms of Section 43 of the Marine Resources Act. But during the time when we split between DEA and DAF, DEA took that section of the Act, lock, stock and barrel. It can be problematic in a way because you declare marine protected areas for two reasons. Firstly, it could be for biodiversity reasons. Maybe you want to protect a certain species that is of importance for biodiversity. Secondly, for the recovery of the commercial fish stocks. In the space of the commercial fish stocks, that's where that's the tough space to say this we want to protect this particular fish so that it grows because it's of commercial importance, basically. But now that piece of legislation or that section sits squarely with DEA. We do have an MOU with DEA, so that we can be able to cooperate with DEA on some of these aspects. And the 22 MPAs that are in the pipeline or to be declared, there were some discussions with DEA, and we did express our issues regarding some of those commercially important species to our counterparts at DEA. Having said that, the monitoring is done consistently by our scientists, our fisheries scientists, to check the levels of the stocks, whether they're recovering or not. If you're talking about rock lobster or the abalone, some of them are within those protected areas. So our determination of total allowable catches will take into consideration those issues of the marine protected areas. And I'm sure Mr. Pierre will expand on that.
Thanks, Chairperson. The issue that I'll quickly respond to is the issue of skills development and training. My apologies for not providing facts and figures because I do not have them at the tip of my fingers. But I can confirm to you, Chair, that yes, there is space for some of the graduates, if not most of those that we do train. And in particular, looking at the NORAD Norway program, I'm proud to say, personally myself, I'm part of that program. I've studied in Norway for 3 years, and I'm here today heading the research division of the fisheries branch. And some of my colleagues that I studied with, others that went before me and others that came after me in the program, we can track them, we can trace them, we know where each and every one of them are. Most of them are in the department managing various fisheries sectors. A few, we have lost them to Department of Environmental Affairs, particularly for the reasons that there's a lot of similarities in the kind of works that we do. So they're trained in fisheries management, aquaculture, and environmental sciences. So if there's a need, chairperson, for exact figures, we can provide them on your request. On the issue of the stock assessment, chairperson, stock assessment or stock modeling, it's a very mathematically intense process, and we'd have to admit whether we like it or not. There's very few mathematical modelers that you find running around the streets. Most of them, we lose them to the banking sector, particularly because of very, very high salaries that they get on the other side. And the current models that we are using as the department to assess and evaluate some of our fisheries stocks, they incorporate a lot of parameters. That includes but not limited to physical oceanographic parameters, your biological parameters, as well as other ecosystem considerations. And the more parameters you include in your stock assessment model, the greater are your certainty and accuracy. So I can confidently say that yes, we are struggling with sourcing correct modelers, but the models that we are using to manage some of our resources, like Hake, we can put them out there in the world and no one can critique those models. With regards to the stock assessment contract, the contract was advertised. As I've indicated, there was only one service provider that was able to express interest and be able to deliver on the specifications that we have requested. But the service provider did not meet some of the requirements that were in the bid, and the bid had to be formally cancelled, and we have commenced with the process of requesting authorization to re-advertise so that we comply with supply chain processes, and we hope that in the next coming week to two, we should be able to have the advert out there to look for assistance for other service providers that can assist with modeling. And in the interim, chairperson, we had made a commitment that we will conduct a skills audit, both internally and externally, to be able to ascertain how we can be able to insource some of the stock assessment models that are using simplified methods to be able to predict the stock status. We do have a number of researchers internally that can perform some of the simplified assessments, two of which, I think it's about four or five, two of which, yes, they are young researchers that are black and are in the process of completing their PhDs. And we will also be having an annual international stock assessment workshop that will take place on the 26th to the 23rd of November in collaboration with UCT. And we have invited four international experts. We'll be critiquing or reviewing some of the methods that we use, particularly in the Hake sector, our new OMP for Hake that we'll be using to determine the CSTAC, the sardine model, the West Coast rock lobster model, and lionfish model to take into account the current changes that have been taking place within the water column. Why would some of the resources moving from one side of the ocean to the other? So, Chairperson, we are in the process of reviewing that contract, and we hope that this time around we'll monitor it closely and better, with the hope that we'll put in place long-term measures to insource some of that work. Thank you.
Minister?
Thanks. The other process I was following with the DG before we came here was the process of signing an MOU with Namibia, because Namibia and Angola were in the same situation as we are, but they have fast-tracked their program of creating their own internal capacity to do stock assessment, because you need that reliable information, because it informs your future TAC allocation and stands you in good stead to take remedial actions where you need to do different permutations. The risk currently is that people who hold your information or data are private individuals, and it is not good for the country to do that. And there was a brief that the MOU, why Namibia, is because of the language similarity too. We have got the same Benguela Reef in which most of our fish species like hake do their spawning and all that stuff. So we have more similar experiences. We have hoped that if we were to sign the agreement with them, they would second their aspects, and we are able then to deploy some of our people to their own institution so that we can fast-track the process. We do have the people, I believe, as Mr. Pierre is saying, but the issue is you can't just draw a person to go and do that work. But I think if we can sign very soon the MOU with Namibia, it would resolve this problem of relying on the private sector.
Okay, Minister, on that one, I think in that meeting that you're briefing us, there was an issue that even Namibia is using the same person. They've changed that one.
The same person used to work, do stock assessment for Angola and Namibia and South Africa, but immediately they acquired their own independence. The same crew of people were trained in Norway, as Mr. Pierre is saying. They further train them into stock-taking purposes, and they are independent, as far as I know, of using the person you refer to. And as I'm saying, it seemed to me that there were few issues that were to be dealt with the MOU, because the MOU have three components. One is to ensure that when our vessel is on research, we can be able to use the same vessels both us and Namibia, because it is costly to have each country running its own independent research. Two, it was the issue of learning from them the processes they have gone through to transform their own fishing space. It's a matter we said we need a feedback, and I said with DG, if we can follow up on that matter, so that if we sign that, I think there is a lot we can share with Namibia in as far as fishing is concerned. For both reasons, we share the similar Benguela current. We are sitting in the same forum. Our companies in Africa are also fishing in Namibia. Obviously, there can be a lot of information, but to me, key is this independence in terms of data collection. And I understand it is quite a sophisticated method to apply, that you cannot just throw anybody to do it, because you may be vulnerable to challenges in court if you don't, or else it can be expensive in terms of sustainability of your natural resources.
Thank you very much, Minister, and your team. we're supposed to get the presentation on working for fisheries, which Parliament has changed its program, so we won't have enough time to go through it, and we'll get you to some other days to come and present on it. But what we want you to, Minister, to do on this working for fisheries, we don't see the work being done actually, that's why we want to know what's happening about the budget and where, how many people have been employed and what are they being trained? What is the situation around that? So, in the next meeting, we'll deal with that. So, thank you very much for the presentation. I was told that Minister Ndichi, you would meet with Honorable Maloi outside this meeting because we must go through the minutes. The rest of the team can go back to the department. thank you very much. DG and Minister, meet with Maloi outside. Albertina, we're good. Copies, honourable members, of the minutes. Okay. let's look at the minutes of the 28th August, 2018. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Yes.
Point 2.2.
Yes.
Just a correction of the surname of the MEC. It is supposed to be Shushu, not Shusha.
Oh.
Yeah. Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable. Page 5. Can we get them over for the adoption of the minutes?
I move for the adoption of the minutes, Chair.
Thank you, Seconda. Honorable Clapper.
I second move for adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much. minutes reflect the true reflection of the meeting of the 28th August 2018, the minutes of the 4th September 2018, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5. Page 6, page 7, and page 8. Can you get them over for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Stay.
Propose that we adopt the minutes, Chair.
Any seconder? Honorable Clapper.
I second the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much. The minutes is duly adopted. Let's look at the 11th September 2018. Page 1. page 2. Page 3. Page 4. And page 5. Can we get the mover for the adoption? Honorable Mapanga.
Thanks, Chair. I move that the minutes of the 11th September 2018 be adopted.
Any seconder? Honorable Tongwana.
A second, Chair.
Thank you very much. The minutes are duly adopted. The minutes of the Tuesday, October 2018, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, and page 6. Can we get the mover for the adoption? Honorable Stay, I propose that we accept the minutes, Chair. That's great. Seconder, Honorable Tapa.
Sure, I second the move to adopt the minutes as to record.
Thank you very much. The minutes are duly adopted. The minutes of the 10th October 2018, page 1. Page 2, page 3, page 4, and page 5. Can we get the mover for the adoption? Honorable Clapper.
Chair, I move that is adopt the minutes as true reflection.
Any seconder? Honorable Mapanga.
I second.
Thank you very much. The minutes are duly adopted. The minutes of the 16th October 2018, page 1. Page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5. Can we get the mover for the adoption of the minutes, Honorable Tongwana?
I move for the adoption of the minutes, Chair.
Any seconder? Honorable Clapper.
I second that we adopt the minutes as a true reflection.
Thank you very much. The minutes are duly adopted. The minutes of the 23rd October 2018, page 1. Page 2, page 3, page 4, and page 5. Can we get the mover for the adoption? Mapanga.
I move that the minutes of the 23rd October 2018 be adopted.
Okay, seconder. Honorable Kruger. Thank you very much. Minutes have duly adopted. The minutes of the 30th October 2018, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4. And page 5. Can we get the mover for the adoption? Honorable Mapanga.
I move for the adoption of the 30 October 2018.
Thank you very much. The seconder, Honorable Clapper.
Okay, I second the adoption of the minutes of the 30th of October. It's true reflection. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the for the seconder and the minutes duly adopted. This was the minutes of the PRRR mainly. Honorable State.
Chairperson, yes, I just wanted to find out what would be the effect if we only adopt the minutes late. Some of the things in the minutes, some of the resolutions that we take, the deadlines have already passed. So, for instance, I just saw, just trying to find it, the minutes of, what is the date? Of 4 September. If you look on page 8 of that one of 4 September, 4.5, the Free State Provincial Department of Agriculture submits the committee a detailed response by 30 September. Will it have an impact if we do something like this? And there's a few others like that also.
Okay. But that doesn't mean that department is not being informed of the result immediately after. This is a formal process, but immediately, because mostly you need a quorum to have the minutes, and we should actually prepare them ourselves before they come here. So, which is a process, but it doesn't mean that we are not following up with the department. Every meeting, after every meeting, even before the result, we can adopt them. As long as the committee agrees, we then actually inform the department. If you check, there are a lot of things already that the department has come back to present because we have actually informed them to come and present on them. So I think the only thing that is short, which we forgot to raise it with the department, I think we'll do it through the letter, was the report of Gauteng. You remember when they were presenting, the report was not similar with the one that we had. We had the old report, they had the new report after we said they must restructure their reports. The person who was representing the HOD at that time said they've given the department national the copy, and the department was supposed to have printed it and sent it to members. I'm not sure whether they've done that. If they've not, we'll follow up on it. That's the outstanding matter that happened with the minutes. That for this term actually when we started. So, but what we are trying to do in most instances is to make sure that the minute does not overlap to another term. We must finish on them before we go to another term. Honorable Stein?
Yes, Chairperson, and I'm back on that one of the Free State. I don't think we ever got a full report from the Free State on our oversight visits, on the requests that we made to them at the Free State, because in the presentation they gave us, it was not all the information detailed that we asked for.
Remember, we've said that we've given them chance to come and respond on the issues because we didn't have the meeting with them in their province. We requested them to come and respond to the question in our presence. And they have responded, but we might not be happy with the report. It's upon us on our report that we'll say on these matters or these issues we are not happy. Therefore, we make then the resolution on specific matter on the report. So because in mainly they bring the report that we're not happy of in most instances, and it's us who must just assess the report and take resolution about them. So we will, as we're going to deal with the report of Free State, look at those issues as they've responded and then take decision on them. The other issues, one is on the, we have been invited by the police for the joint meeting on the, which is tomorrow. They'll be dealing with the safety, rural safety. We've been requesting to meet with them on the rural safety that affect farm workers and farm and farmers. So the meeting is tomorrow. We request members to attend because it will empower us greatly, because we'll have the police and those that matters most, and we can then be able to get answers. The other invite is on the colloquium on climate change. Same things tomorrow. old assembly start at 11 to 2:30. So we would have to see how we divide ourselves in that regard, because the climate change now it's affecting the sector, our sector, as a agriculture, forestry and fisheries. So we have to be part of that, and so that when the meeting in Poland take place, we would have made our input as the sector. So we'll see how to divide ourselves. We honor all the invitation. I think those are the things. So thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.